This is The Guardian.
Today, the ambulance and A&E crisis that's taking hold even before we've hit the worst of winter. What do you think of when you imagine calling an ambulance? If you've never had to do it, it might be something from hospital drama. A call to 999, a team of paramedics scrambling, and the sound of a siren at the scene a few minutes later. A patient wheeled into A&E, and then off to the next job. But in Britain in 2021, the reality often isn't like that.
8:30 on Monday night, the latest ambulance joins the queue outside Accident and Emergency, and the emergency department is full.
Occupancy of hospital wards has already hit its winter peak.
The situation's pretty grim, unfortunately, just now. Yeah, we're certainly up against it once again.
There are not enough hospital beds to cope with the surging demand.
On some occasions at the moment, we're seeing a busier department than we have done ever before.
Yesterday, new figures showed that the number of people waiting for routine hospital treatment had reached a new record high of 5.8 million. 12-hour waits at A&E are becoming a norm. And as a consequence, queues of ambulances are log-jammed outside hospitals with critically ill patients left waiting inside.
I've never seen it so tough. And unfortunately, we had enough resilience to deal with the pandemic, but we're really running out of resilience now.
So how does all of that play out on the ground? And what does it mean for the people needing urgent help, desperately waiting to hear that siren? To find out, The Guardian's Stephen Morris went out with the Welsh Ambulance Service. This is the story of a single shift and the frustration of the crews trying to do their jobs.
Is this the worst you've seen it in terms of having to wait?
Yes, yes. And it's only getting worse and worse. Last winter was a nightmare. And this winter, I reckon, is going to be the worst of all.
From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, a day on the front line with paramedics stuck in a waiting game. Steve Morris, you're a news reporter for The Guardian, and in the midst of this intense pressure that threatens to torpedo the NHS, you spent a day with paramedics. First of all, can you tell me where you were?
Yes, I was in the town of Pontypool. A small Welsh town, about half an hour, 40 minutes north of Cardiff. That's where the ambulance station is based. It serves a very big area, though. There's quite a few towns, lots of villages, quite a rural patch. One of the big problems they have is that there's only one A&E department. Everything now goes to this one hospital, the Grange Hospital.
And who do you meet when you get there?
I met Lee.
Lee Davis, paramedic with the Welsh Ambulance Service.
And Keith?
Keith Rogers, emergency medical technician.
Keith, he's the more junior member of that crew. Both very experienced guys, very nice guys. They're clearly a very closely knit team. They've been working together for quite a while. And it was a 10-hour day shift starting at 7 a.m. Pitch black when we got there. I got there a bit before the shift, so we had a nice cup of tea inside, as is traditional in these sort of jobs.
So, Lee, your shift started at 7 a.m. this morning?
That's correct, yeah.
And what have you done so far?
Well, unfortunately, when we came into work this morning, we were presented with an ambulance with no stretcher on it this morning.
But the first thing they had to do was go and fetch a stretcher. It's more technical than the stretcher. It's kind of a big bed kind of thing that they put the patients on.
The shift prior to ourselves had obviously been stuck at hospital.
So they spent an hour having to do that before they could go out onto their first proper job of the day.
So the knock-on effect of queues the day before means that at the very start of the day, they're already an hour behind schedule.
Yes.
So what is the first job they do?
So your first job was where and when?
Up to Blenavon.
A woman called Caroline, who was aged mid-40s, she'd had chest pains in the middle of the night.
The lady there had been waiting since 3:30 this morning for an ambulance.
She'd called 999 about 3:30 a.m. and it was 8 a.m. by the time they got to her.
So there was a 5-hour wait just to get to her?
Yeah, I was quite surprised by that delay. If somebody's having chest pains, and you know, serious chest pains, I think she was saying she was 7 out of 10 on the painometer when they arrived.
How rare is that sort of wait?
Nowadays, it's not rare at all, unfortunately, and that is seen to be quite respectable time nowadays. Been to patients not so long ago, spent up to 12 hours lying on the floor waiting for an ambulance.
Wow.
And they weren't pleased about it. Lee said,
you know, I've got elderly relatives myself, and to think that one of my relatives could be on the floor for 12 hours waiting for an ambulance is not a nice feeling, you know. Yeah.
But that is what happens almost every day, I think.
You know, four or five hour wait is quite commonplace at the moment.
So this patient they've been called out to see, you've said that she's got quite strong chest pains, but what else is the situation and what condition is she in when they arrive?
She was sat in her living room with a friend who'd been helping her through the night. She was holding herself and she was very unsure of what was happening to her. She was pleased to see them, clearly. They were really nice with her, really sympathetic, apologetic for taking so long to get there. At some point during the day, somebody said to me, that's the first thing we always say when we walk through the door. Sorry we took so long to get here. They checked her heart and other vital functions, checked that she was stable for the moment, and then put calls in to try and find a place to take her to. It was decided they'd take her down to the Grange. So about half an hour drive, I think.
And what time do they get Caroline back to the hospital and what's happening when they get there?
They got her to the Grange at about 9:10.
There's, what, 7, 8 ambulances waiting here?
Yeah.
You're one of them.
Right, so they go straight into a traffic jam outside A&E, basically.
Yes, their engines are on. There's diesel fumes everywhere because of that, so it's not the healthiest spot to be waiting around, but they have to keep that on to keep the heating on and keep the equipment going with patients in the back.
How long might you wait here, do you think?
At the moment, we have no idea. It is really a case of how long is a piece of string. We could be a half an hour, we could be for the entirety of our shift, is all honesty, and that has happened in the past.
Again, there was no surprise in that. They thought there might have been more ambulances there when they arrived. They said there's times when there's almost 20 ambulances waiting there.
Wow. And what happens to Caroline in the meantime? I mean, it's now been over 5 hours since she called in for help with 7 out of 10 chest pains, and she's still in the back of this ambulance.
Yes. To be fair, they managed to stabilise her back at her home, so her chest pains were down to, I think, 3 or 4 out of 10. She was in the back of the ambulance, just waiting. She seemed very resigned.
OK, so... is it right to call you Caroline? Is that okay? I'm Adam, I'm one of the A&E doctors.
The nurses and the doctors come out, again, very calm, very professional.
Whereabouts in your chest, in the centre? Or
in the centre,
could you point to where it was?
She was just clearly desperate to get sorted out. She was very quietly spoken and a little bit down, obviously.
So central, but towards the left side?
Yeah.
And in that time that she's waiting, quite an urgent situation, do they have other cases that come in that then jump the queue? Is it done in a chronological fashion in terms of who's seen first by the doctors?
It's done on a case-by-case basis. If a more urgent patient comes in who's clearly needs treatment instantly, they jump the queue. If your patient isn't in that critical condition, you have to wait and wait and wait.
So how do you feel about that?
Quite frustrated, I think, is the honest word. Purely because we then are prevented from attending other patients, and you know, we've then got to go and attend these patients who may have been waiting for hours and hours and hours for an ambulance, and it's just pure frustration. It's not what we joined up to do. Is yeah.
How long have you done this job for?
12 years. 8 years as an EMT, and just over 4 years now as a paramedic. Yeah.
Is this the worst it's been?
Worst I've seen it, yes, definitely.
OK, thank you.
No problem.
So So, Steve, sadly, Wales isn't the only place where this is happening. We're hearing horror stories of queues and even worse, of patients dying in the backs of ambulances from across the UK.
Gerard Brown, a husband and father of three, had a fall in his home and was struggling to breathe. His family dialed 999, but they waited almost 2 full days for help to arrive. Gerard had already died by the time the ambulance turned up.
Can you tell me what's been going on?
The latest NHS data for England shows it's been the busiest September on record. Major A&Es treated more than 1.39 million people, the highest ever for that month. Ambulances responded to a record 76,000 life-threatening call-outs, and 999 took nearly 1 million calls.
Before the pandemic, we'd take maybe 5,500 999 calls into our control room every day, whereas across the summer, we've been taking 6,000 and at points peaking up to around 7,000. That's comparable to a New Year's Eve for us in London, and that puts real pressure and demand on both our 999 call takers and our operational colleagues working on ambulance.
And those delays outside hospitals, 35,000 handover delays of at least an hour outside hospitals in September, compared with 4,700 in April.
Oh, wow.
There have been some really worrying examples of things that appear to have gone badly wrong. For example, Worcestershire Royal Hospital, there was a patient rushed into the resuscitation room but couldn't be saved after waiting inside an ambulance for some 5 hours. There's an investigation launched into that. Same sort of thing in Norfolk, where a patient had a fatal heart attack in an ambulance. And we had a patient dying in a very busy Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge. It's not just Wales, it's across England, across the UK.
The Scottish Ambulance Service is now operating at their highest state of emergency.
I recognise that some people are not getting the standard of service that they should be getting, or indeed the standard of service that the Scottish Ambulance Service wants to deliver. That is not acceptable, and I apologise unreservedly.
The situation is getting worse and worse.
So, why is this happening? I mean, people I speak to assume that with the success of the vaccine rollout and a far lower rate of COVID deaths compared to this time last year, people assume that it means the pressure is off for the NHS. But this just isn't true, is it?
It's not true. Professor Stephen Powis, the National Medical Director at the NHS, has described the NHS as running hot at the moment. The highest ever number of patients in A&E in September, 14 times as many COVID patients in hospital compared to the same month last year.
The NHS is under considerable pressure. We've had a very tough summer as we have continued to treat people with COVID, being admitted to hospitals. A society has opened up again and we've begun to see a return to near normal levels of people who need urgent and emergency care. So it undoubtedly feels exceptionally busy, and our NHS organisations are telling us that all the time.
We've heard from Catherine Henderson, President of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine, talking about the lack of available beds in hospitals causing patients to become stranded in A&E or held outside in ambulances, as we saw at the Grange Hospital.
I've never seen it so tough. We've got a plan in the urgent and emergency care system, but it's just a short-term, medium-term plan to try and deal with the immediate problems. But actually, this is a pathway that's been underfunded, under-resourced for years. And unfortunately, we had enough resilience to deal with the pandemic, but we're really running out of resilience now.
Where else do professionals say that the demand is coming from? Because we've recently looked at the strain on GP services. How much is that, for instance, a factor?
I think that is a factor. People are struggling to get to see their GP, so they're looking for other routes into the health service. They're turning up at A&E departments. There's a notice outside the Grange Hospital saying, if you can walk into here, you shouldn't be walking into here. You're not sick enough to come here. And I think hospitals are desperately trying to catch up. Because of COVID, so many elective procedures had to stop. So hospitals are trying to get more people in, which is causing pressure on the system. There's also so many staff who are off because of COVID.
Colleagues off sick or self-isolating mean rotas are hard to fill. Nursing staff here say they pride themselves on being resilient, but now they're at absolute breaking point.
We deal with the sickest patients first, and unfortunately that means patients are going to have to wait. And it's just 18 months ago the public were clapping for us, and now they're screaming and shouting at us, and racial abuse has increased, verbal abuse has increased, physical abuse has increased in our department. And it's really difficult. You feel as though you're failing.
So So, Steve, how much does all this affect the Grange Hospital and the paramedics that you met?
Hugely.
I think, obviously, COVID is a massive issue, but call volume at the minute, I believe, is up something like 30-odd% on this time last year and the year before. And the fact that we've got only one A&E department at the moment that is serving this area, which is the Grange.
The hospitals around the Grange have been downgraded or all closed, so they're having to deal with many more patients and much more pressure.
Everybody from surrounding areas all converge on this one department. The system's completely overwhelmed.
But also the problem of the strain they're suffering. There's so many hospital staff, doctors, nurses and ambulance people who are off with stress because of trying to deal with this terrible situation. I had a chat with a very experienced paramedic called Simon Davis. He'd just taken off 3 months sick and he said it was stress. I couldn't sleep. I didn't want to come to work. It was the frustration building up,
right,
not being able to do your job as you want to do your job, which was the worst part of it for him.
And so it's really grinding down the people who are working there in a way that is really affecting the service, full stop.
I think that's right. The grind of every day, the waiting outside the hospital, it's very wearing what they're having to do at the moment.
The new line should be reactivated in 30 seconds. Press the new key to prevent timeout.
Steve, let's go back to Lee, Keith and their patient Caroline, who are still sitting in a queue outside A&E. What happens next?
It was about 10 a.m. and Caroline had been in the back of the ambulance for about 2 hours now. How long do you think we'll be here?
Half hour.
Right.
We can go into the sitting area, which is manned by the nursing staff. Just need to make sure she's pain-free before we take her in. She's had some morphine now and the pain score has come right down. So we're going to give it 20 minutes to 30 minutes to make sure the pain has gone, and then we can put her into the sitting area.
How long do you have to wait here sometimes?
I've been here for 12 hours. I've done a 12-hour shift here, no problem.
So that's your whole shift?
That can be a whole shift here, yeah. Just chasing our tails most days.
So if a crew is stuck outside with a patient for, as Keith told you, for as long as 12 hours, once they're sure the patient's needs are taken care of and they're regularly monitoring them, what else can they do?
They can get on with a bit of homework. At one point, Keith was sat next to Caroline, making sure she was okay, but he was on an iPad doing some studying.
Well, I've got the machine set for observations every 15 minutes. And then while we're chatting, we're just doing a little bit of online learning. And that's about it, really. Just cater for the patient's needs.
They get on with a bit of paperwork. There's plenty of time to chat and swap stories. But most of the talk is about, why are we doing this? Why are we waiting? How can we sort this out? First of all, your name and your job.
Nigel Jones, emergency medical technician.
I met Nigel, who was an EMT from based in Monmouthshire.
What's the normal waiting time for you here?
I would say an average, probably 4 or 5 hours.
And again, just like everybody else, he was expressing his frustration at having to wait.
You hear the personal radios going off saying anyone available for red call, which is obviously the life-threatening side of it.
Nigel was talking to me about how hard it is to hear a red call coming in. Red call in Wales, that's conditions like a heart attack, severe choking or bleeding, the patient not breathing or unconscious.
That's obvious that, you know, the control people there, they're swamping calls, so they're looking at these calls coming on the screen, and they can't allocate ambulances to them because we're sat here or we're at a hospital in South Wales.
And he's stuck outside a hospital looking after a patient who isn't a red call.
But you just can't get stressed out about it. You know, you've got the patient you're dealing with and you deal with that patient at that time. And, you know,
what time is it when Caroline is finally admitted into the hospital?
At 10:53 is what I wrote down in my notebook. So that was more than 7 hours since she dialed 999. So, guys, it's 11:30 now. That means you're 4.5 hours into your shift. How's it going?
Well, as you've seen, we've not really done a lot this morning in terms of numbers of patients. It's getting that time of day now where it'll be meal break time for us today now. So that's pretty much the morning wrapped up, I guess.
Coming up. What happens next for Lee, Keith, and for Caroline? Steve, what is happening in Wales to help alleviate the strain on the paramedics that you were talking to?
The Welsh Government says it's working hard to try and sort the situation out.
The Welsh Government has announced an extra £170 million for the Welsh NHS. The money will go to try to tackle rising waiting lists, as figures published today showed over one in five of the Welsh population are now on a waiting list.
It's got what it calls an active delivery plan, which is designed to help manage 999 calls and improve that patient handover. It's also announced an extra £48 million for social care to try and get people out of hospitals and being looked after in the community.
Help has come recently in the shape of the military. The Welsh Government has drafted in 100 extra drivers.
And they've also drafted in soldiers and RAF and Navy personnel. They're not there to help with medical care. They're not qualified to do that, but they're there to drive paramedics and EMTs around.
So, Steve, after spending the whole first half of their shift with just one patient and then grabbing their very quick lunch, Lee and Keith are finally free to do something else. How does the next part of their day go?
So, second job of the day. It's now... What time is it now? Just before 2 o'clock.
They were called onto another job. What are we doing here?
OK, so the second job we were allocated today was a gentleman just up the road from our station, which had been attended by his own GP earlier this morning. GP deemed that a hospital admission was necessary and so has booked him into the acute medical unit here at Neville Hall.
This one was a guy called Anthony. He'd suffered an infection, shortness of breath, a couple of falls, and his GP had said that he needed to be taken to hospital up in Abergavenny in an ambulance. Now, when we arrived, he was able to walk around and pack his bags himself, and Keith and Lee weren't convinced that it was a job for them. They're an emergency ambulance, and although, they were very charming and very delicate with this gentleman, one of their frustrations was that they were doing a lot of, as they see it, driving people around rather than caring for people.
Is this a good use of your time today, this particular patient?
Not essentially. As an emergency ambulance, this patient could more than likely have been transferred here by other means of ambulance transport, but not necessarily an emergency ambulance.
They had to drive him up to Abergavenny, which took a couple of hours, and it was mid to late afternoon by the time he was wheeled into hospital.
Is it a frustrating day for you today?
It is, yes, to be honest, yes. As I said earlier on this morning, not doing the things that essentially we are put on the road to do, I don't think. Queuing outside hospitals. And yes, routine transfer, which, I mean, it is part of the job. We take that, but not essentially what emergency ambulances are for.
So what happens now for the rest of the day? You wait for your next call?
Yeah, so once this gentleman's offloaded now, we'll, again, go punch clear and see what else control's got for us. I'm sure there's something else on the stack they would like us to do before we finish this afternoon.
Wow, so just two patients have taken them within touching distance of the end of their shift. What does the rest of their day look like?
So there was one more job, another elderly gentleman, this one Howard, in his 80s. He'd fallen, might have cracked his rib. This was in Pontypool. So what they did there, they went and fetched him from his bed, put him in the ambulance, took him down to the Grange Hospital, and by that time it was almost the end of their shift. And what happened then is that an ambulance liaison person sorted out a later shift to take over this patient and effectively babysit him while he could wait for his turn to go into hospital. And that meant Lee and Keith could finish their shift on time.
And what time was it?
They finished at 5 p.m.
So, end of the shift?
Yes.
How's it gone today?
Not too bad, in all honesty. As you said, few frustrations along the way, which has become commonplace for us, unfortunately, in the current climate.
They said 5 years ago they would do 8 jobs in a night, but now they're doing 1 job's not unusual, 2 jobs maybe the average, maybe 2.5, 3 jobs, no more than that.
And what about Caroline, their very first patient of the day with the heart pains? How is she doing by the time they leave?
I asked Keith at the end, how do you think she's going to do? How will she be?
She's gone in, she's had blood taken, she's had the x-rays done, she's had ECGs done. The doctors reviewed her on everything, and they've now placed her in the department. for observations.
I asked, is she going to be all right?
Is she going to be OK?
And in a very quiet, a resigned kind of way, but I think a satisfied way as well, he said, yeah, she's going to be OK. So a kind of a happy ending, I think.
How do you feel at the end of the day? Are you satisfied with what you've achieved today?
Always satisfied when you see the patients, you know, because we have a good rapport with the patients. They're glad to see us. They do get care, you know. It doesn't stop because we're here. It continues. The nurses come on, they get their x-rays, they get their bloods. So it's just an holding area. It just means that we're not available in the community for another call that's waiting on the stack. Somebody could be there for hours on end. You know, that's the frustration, really.
Back on tomorrow?
Yep.
So as for Lee and Keith, it sounds like this gruelling shift, 2.5 jobs in a day, has become their working norm. And all of this is being mirrored across the country, while NHS England is also telling hospitals to clear the huge backlog of patients waiting for hospital treatment, you know, as if it were that easy. I mean, the whole thing sounds like a precariously balanced Jenga tower waiting to collapse. I mean, what was your lasting impression of what you saw that day?
My lasting impression was huge admiration for the way they all go about their business. Not just the ambulance guys, but the people in the hospital as well. But struggling to do the job they want to do. They're desperate to be working more intensively than they're able to do at the moment. And I guess the most worrying thing was everybody said, we've got COVID coming back, we've got a flu season which is going to hit very hard. It's going to be a really, really hard winter. It's going to get worse and worse.
Steve, thank you.
Thank you very much.
My thanks to Stephen Morris and to Lee Davis and Keith Rogers from the Welsh Ambulance Service. To read Stephen's piece, you can queue for a whole shift, the crisis facing Welsh ambulance crews. Head over to theguardian.com and do read Dennis Campbell's story published yesterday about the GPs who are having seriously ill patients left in their waiting rooms because queues at A&Es are so long. One more thing. It's the last day of Science Weekly's daily dispatches from COP26. With Damien Carrington and Fiona Harvey discussing how negotiations are going as they come to an end. Do give it a listen wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was produced by Rose Della Rabiti. Sound design is by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.